You really need to put a lot of attention and consider it a core business process to have traceability and tracking of how your relationships are evolving. So that's where something like a CRM, a customer relationship management software system, is really critical. And that was actually the first system that we set up before anything else at our company. Was, all right, we want to build these relationships for you. We're all young guys in our 30s. You know, we see decades of doing this. So we want to do it the right way and really put in the foundation for that. So I'd say that's one of the biggest things that you should set up right from the start.
Welcome to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate Show. Whether you are an active or passive investor, we'll teach you how to scale your real estate investing business into something big.
Keith Meyer is a multifamily apartment sponsor and syndicator, acquiring properties across the Sun Belt. And fun fact, he's also a mobile home park owner. Keith, welcome to the show.
I'm doing great, Sam. How you doing?
Hey, man, I'm great. Thank you. Appreciate you coming on. Same three questions I ask every guest that comes on the show. In 90 seconds or less, can you tell me, where did you start? Where are you now? And how'd you get there?
Yeah, I started in the Midwest. That's where I'm from originally. Been out in the Southwest last couple of years by way of New Mexico. Live in San Diego, California currently. So I'm part of a multifamily syndication team now. We focus primarily on the Sun Belt states. So we've closed deals in Kansas City, a couple of deals in Texas, a couple of deals in New Mexico and Arizona over the last few years. And I started much smaller than that. So I'm happy to dive into that a little bit deeper with you today.
Man, that's fantastic. Yeah, absolutely. Tell me about the team you're on now, and then maybe we'll hear kind of the backstory.
Sounds good. Yeah. So right now I'm a principal with Symphony Capital Group. We were founded about 2 years ago here in San Diego, one of four principals. We all come from a different background, so I think we've formed a really strong, cohesive team in that regard. I'm primarily on the front end, deal sourcing and vetting and acquisition side. So you just can imagine this hyper-competitive environment. You really need to build in systems and competitive advantages to be able to not only source deals, but underwrite them and make competitive offers in a timely fashion. So I think my engineering and systems background has really lent itself to being able to hone that in and make that one of our core competencies.
Absolutely. Yeah, it takes an engineer to really make something, a machine like that, run really well. How did you guys pick the four of you? It's kind of hard, you know, finding partners is a challenge, let alone finding four at once that want to join up and form a company.
It is. It's funny. I get asked that question a lot. It was very organic. So we met each other just through commercial real estate networking meetings around San Diego and kept bumping into each other on a regular basis, saw that we all had obviously a similar work ethic, that we were showing up at 7 o'clock on a Tuesday night to attend these meetings. And we got to talking deeper and deeper and saw that we were kind of in similar facets of our real estate journey, although coming from different angles. So I saw a lot of compatibility in that regard, and you know, took it pretty slow at first in terms of looking how we could work together. And that ultimately culminated in forming a company. And now here we are in 2022 with over $100 million asset under management. And we're really a driving force in this industry. So very proud of where we came from and where we are today.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah, that's really, really intriguing. So there's four of you. Eventually, how did you guys define roles? I mean, did you guys take personality tests and sit down and say, okay, this is what I'm good at? I mean, what did that
look? Would have been smart. Yeah, I know that's becoming kind of a popular approach, and that's not a bad one at all. You know, we kind of bit the whole apple off and just saw what each other was good at and what we enjoyed doing. So, you know, fortunately, again, we came from pretty different backgrounds. So I'd say we were 70% of the way there, just kind of common sense wise. And we were able to hone in the last 30% just through working together and building out systems and things like that. So it's funny, we just had our annual retreat back in December, and each year we kind of revolve and redefined our company roles a little bit. And this year had the least amount of changes because we had really had it pretty locked in and updated throughout the year. So it's nice to see that we kind of stuck to our guns of what we had planned from the previous year and had that laid out pretty well.
Yeah, absolutely. Are all four of you full-time?
Almost. We are getting there. That is a 2022 goal, and I'm very confident that we'll get there probably around halfway through the year.
Right. That's absolutely awesome. I mean, you know, that's a lot of assets to take down in a very short period of time. What are some of the things you feel like you've done right that others should emulate?
You know, I was thinking about that before the interview, and I would say one of the biggest things that does not get enough attention is staying organized and follow-up, and I mean with individual people. You know, we built up a big enough network and brand that we get introduced to all sorts of cool, interesting people that are very capable of helping us get to where we want to be. But you can't just you know, shoot off the occasional email and then leave it at that and assume that they're going to follow up and you're going to remember what you talked about 3 weeks from now and all that, that stuff. You really need to put a lot of attention and consider it a core business process to have traceability and tracking of how your relationships are evolving. So that's where something like a CRM, a customer relationship management software system, is really critical. And that was actually the first system that we set up before anything else at our company. Was, all right, we want to build these relationships for you. We're all young guys in our 30s. You know, we see decades of doing this. So we want to do it the right way and really put in the foundation for that. So I'd say that's one of the biggest things that you should set up right from the start.
That's really intriguing. I've not, no one's come on the show and said that outright yet. And I think that's absolutely brilliant because there's so many different ways. I mean, so many different relationships we have. Right? You've got peer-to-peer where it's like, oh, hey, you know what? You might be able to present opportunities to me. Then you've got you to your investor base. And that's a whole different set of relationships. I mean, there's there's a lot of relationships to keep track of and to remember, hey, I wanted to connect Keith with person X. And then, yeah, that's intriguing. And I know there's a million of them, so you're not being called upon to sell one in particular.
Oh, no. Yeah, I'm happy to talk about it. Yeah, so we use HubSpot. That's a system that I like a lot. Their free version is great, so it's really easy to get up and started with. Integrates with Gmail, so you can track, set reminders to check on emails and set tasks and things like that. Kind of operates as a project management platform as well. And it's funny, what you just said is exactly right, Sam. And the other consideration is that there's so many communication channels these days.
Right.
You know, email is just one of 10 ways that people communicate, pretty common these days. So being able to track all that and then, you know, have kind of understand what each channel's purpose and use is for as well is something to really focus on. And as you build more personal relationships with people like brokers or co-sponsors or property owners, you'll go from, you know, kind of the more templated formal email approach to text messages, to maybe they'll jump on a Slack channel with you or a WhatsApp chat or something like that. So that certainly evolves, which is great, but it's really critical to stay organized with that stuff, or that you're just going to let a lot of things fall through the cracks by accident.
Oh, so true. It's so true. And I'm guilty. You're convicting me right now as you say it, because absolutely guilty of like, oh man, I should have followed up with, and then it's 6 months later, it's like, yeah, that ship has sailed.
Yep.
And that costs money.
Sure.
That costs money because it took time and money to build that relationship. And then you lost the opportunity, you know, presented by that, what could have been presented by that relationship. And it's like, oh, well, yeah, that's absolutely intriguing. So you guys set up a CRM out of the gate and said, hey, we're going to do this. This is how we're going to track, you know, our relationships. And then what was the next step you guys took?
So then we continue to build on our business systems, essentially kind of starting with underwriting. So Jeremy, one of my fellow principals, comes from a very in-depth commercial underwriting background. So we, you know, kind of took the best parts of other models and other examples that we had come across before and created a pretty customized underwriting system, which we are probably on rev 50 of that, if I had to guess at this point. It's unbelievable how much that tool in particular morphs and evolves over time.
Yeah.
And especially on the front end, the deal screening end, that is so critical these days. We're in a fortunate position at Symphony Capital Group where we have a very strong deal flow these days. And I know that's not always the case for certain operators. So we want to be able to take advantage of that and not waste that opportunity. So with that, we need to be able to pretty quickly screen a deal to see if it meets our criteria and if it's worth spending, you know, an hour, 2-3 hours underwriting or investigating more deeply.
What are some of the things you look at when you say that? There are high level things that are particular to you guys. You say, hey, this is something, this is go, no go, or investigate further. What are some of those initial screening things you guys take a look at?
Great question. So it's two faceted, I would say. One is the property, and then the second is the actual sponsor or the deal structure itself. So property is a little bit more straightforward, I think, for the average investor. That's going to be looking at things like market demographics. So we do have CoStar access. That's great for getting submarket, zip code level, street level type demographics. So, and then, you know, it's a 50-page report in some cases. So you still have to be very adept at pulling out the relevant content in a relatively short time frame and then plugging it into our model. So we look at things like median household income and rent as a percentage of that income. So you want to see that residents, especially if you're in kind of the mid-tier B-class properties, aren't cost constrained. So you don't want more than, let's say, a third of their income being spent on housing in that case. And then we would also look at things like job growth and population growth are probably our two other biggest submarket criteria that we look at, just to make sure that, you know, we're underwriting to 5-year holds in most cases. So we want to make sure that there's still a good growth trajectory as far as jobs, income, and rent growth over that time frame.
What about a property? Say I shipped you a deal and said, hey, Keith, you know, here's something I think would be great for you guys in the right market. Like, what do you guys look at? Because I know you said, hey, you know, learning that skill of saying, no, not for us. There's some things you guys have to check off in order to spend that 3 hours initially underwriting it. What are they?
Yep. So I mentioned submarket itself. We'll look at value add opportunities as well. So the rent's pretty well understood. And especially if you're looking at making a competitive bid and you're going to be up against a couple of other groups in almost every case these days, if not dozens of groups that are, you know, almost as adept as you are in many cases, you need to look for that competitive advantage as far as how do you generate additional income to that property. So a lot of times we'll look at how the utilities are being maintained. Are they even being built back at a flat rate in the first place? That's kind of an easy place to start, but there are actually much more advanced ways of recuperating a lot of those utility costs and reducing the expense in the first place. And there's some companies out there that specialize in that. Coming from the mobile home park space, we're big on installing water submeters to monitor water usage and then, you know, get a real-time accurate read via a cellular network in that case. So a lot of emphasis, I would say, in that regard on utilities, and then also looking at the vintage and the infrastructure of the utility systems themselves. If you're dealing with a lot of older cast iron or concrete sewers or older plumbing water pipes that's not modern PVC, you know, you're going to have to underwrite to a fairly substantial CapEx reserve because you know that's going to come, you know, one of these days. So that's something that can differentiate a property pretty quickly as well. And then there's some more creative income generators, additionally, that have become pretty popular in our arena on the apartment side. Things like internet tech packages, working with telecom providers to institute. Those are kind of win-win situations because you can bring high-speed internet capabilities. A lot of times they'll kind of upgrade the infrastructure on the building for you. And then you're offering that at a better price point to your end resident. But then it's also a value add to the building operator themselves. So that's something that we look at. Additionally, things like introducing more amenities, you know, dog parks, covered parking, things like that, and then billing back for that accordingly. When you're in a 5-cap, 4-cap rate environment, and every dollar of income that you can generate results in $20+ of value to the property, little things like that can really add up quite a bit over time.
Absolutely. Let's hear the backstory, you know, that you talked about. We haven't quite got to that. You know, what were you doing in real estate before you guys formed Symphony Capital Group? Was that in mobile home parks, or tell us what that was?
Yeah. So I started from a couple of different angles. So, you know, my background's in kind of more traditional engineering, got my engineering degree in the Midwest and started out in the corporate world, working a couple of different jobs in operations capacity. Nothing directly into real estate to start. I actually bought my first primary residence at a pretty young age in my early 20s in New Mexico. Lived in that for about 5 years. And then when I was making a career transition, still in the corporate world, this is about 10 years ago, out to San Diego, decided to hang on to that property and try out this whole landlord thing. So that was my first direct personal introduction into being a rental property operator. My family did have exposure to that previously. So my grandfather was a residential developer, and he kind of got my father involved in some property investing aspects, although my father was primarily in the corporate world at the time. And then he actually made a late in life career transition into commercial brokerage. So we had owned a couple things here and there. Back in the 90s, we bought a mobile home park in the Midwest, and it was almost on a whim to an extent. I shouldn't say that, but really, this is, you know, back pre-internet era, vetted a lot of different investment opportunities, knew the benefits of real estate more from a network level than a direct level at that point. And all things came across, settled on mobile home parks as the best investment at the time. And it's funny how right we were. And I wish we would have been more emphatic about it back then, because that was back in the days of 15, 20 caps. And now they're almost as low as apartment buildings are right now. It's unbelievable what's happened in that industry. So that is to say, all those different exposure points kind of planted the seed in the back of my mind, I'd say, you know, when I became a direct landlord on that single family, saw how, you know, how things work, how the tax implications are, how nice it was to have a couple $1,000s of cash flow each month. And, you know, that kind of started the genesis, I would say. And that's my start. And then there's been a bunch of steps between there and over the last 10 years to how I've gotten to where I am today.
That's really intriguing. Are you guys also looking for mobile home parks now, or is it strictly multifamily?
We are. It's still fairly rare, I'd say, to syndicate those just because the deal flow isn't there. There's only X amount of parks. You know, it's a fraction of what's available on the apartment side.
Right.
But I would say there's still a good 5-year window probably of getting very solid deals. And I think the asset class is going to remain very strong for a variety of reasons, not the least of which home affordability. So if you can get your hands on a 40 plus unit park, do it, lock it up, and you will be able to find partners that will help you take it down because they are worth their weight in gold these days.
That's really, really interesting. Yeah, just like you said, the affordability of homes, it's the last affordable housing solution we have.
Couldn't agree more.
Yeah, it's pretty incredible, which is also, I mean, you can tell that there's interest in the space just when you go to the manufactured housing manufacturers. I mean, it's almost impossible to get new supply even right now.
Yeah, they're on about a 12-month backlog, right. Which is right. Insane. Same issue we're seeing on, you know, site-built housing as well. There's just not enough supply of it right now. So demand's through the roof.
Right. Yeah, that'll be interesting to see certainly where that goes. 2022. What do you guys want to do in 2022?
A lot of things. So like I mentioned earlier, we did our annual retreat back in December, and it was nice to be able to take some time to work on the business and not just in the business scrambling and hustling every day. So we actually set aside some time to map this out appropriately. And, you know, we have our goals as far as acquisitions and equity raise and things like that. And that's really a big part of our mission statement, is being able to raise equity, because what we're doing is we're bringing our investor network into quality deals. So we want to make that number as big as possible. And we're proud of where we were last year, but we want to 10x that this year if we can. And fortunately, with the deal flow that we have, if we're able to execute appropriately, I feel very confident in doing that this year. So I would think we're going to have maybe an acquisition every month. Something like that would be a realistic goal for us. And we're on pace for that at this point.
Man, that's fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. Keith, let's jump here into the final four questions. And you may have already answered this. What is one tool or resource you find you can't live without?
So I mentioned the CRM. I also like a project management system. So we use monday.com to kind of manage our deal pipeline, essentially. So you have the people pipeline management through the CRM, and then you have the deal acquisition and execution pipeline management more through a traditional project management type software. So that's a really good one.
Right. Oh, that's great. What is one mistake you can help our listeners avoid, and how would you avoid it?
Don't be afraid to ask for referrals or to get involved. People, that's part of the reason why I'm really, really drawn to the real estate industry in particular, is how willing people are to help, to give out information, invaluable information for free. And, you know, they're very willing to do that, to share, because it is such an abundant industry. So if you have a question, there's tons of online platforms or meetings, or you pick up the phone and call somebody, reach out on LinkedIn, and chances are you're going to get a solid response.
Fabulous. Question number three, when it comes to investing in the world, what's one thing you're doing right now to make the world a better place?
Well, yeah, we are proud of our involvement in affordable housing. And again, that's something that I caught on to pretty early, I would say, is the growing need for that, and how the world and in our country, maybe in particular, is not doing a great job of providing that. So, you know, we target properties to where we can still remain affordable by those metrics. And we're getting deeper into the actual subsidized housing space as well, because I see long runway for that. I think we're going to be left with no choice but try to improve the access to that type of housing.
Right.
So that's something that I'm pretty passionate about personally.
That's awesome. Keith, if our listeners want to get in touch with you or learn more about you, what is the best way to do that?
So our website is symphonycapitalgroup.com. My email is keith@symphonycapitalgroup.com. We're all over all the social media channels. Can't miss us. Instagram, LinkedIn, Facebook. My partner, Alice Hammond, runs an amazing YouTube channel with a ton of good real estate educational content on there. So check out Alice Hammond's YouTube channel. And then sign up for our email list, because we send out a lot of good content. We just did an educational webinar today on how kind of what we talked about, how to screen and vet a deal and what criteria specifically in 2022 you want to look at if you're wanting to get into a syndication as a limited partner with investment capital.
That's awesome. Keith, thank you for your time today. I certainly appreciate it.
You as well, Sam. Great talking to you. Take care.
Hey, thanks for listening to the How to Scale Commercial Real Estate podcast. If you can do me a favor and subscribe and leave us a review on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, Google Podcasts, whatever platform it is you use to listen, if you can do that for us, that would be a fantastic help to the show. It helps us both attract new listeners as well as rank higher on those directories. So appreciate you listening. Thanks so much, and hope to catch you on the next episode.